Blog Talk Radio.
Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And in the presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I see aspiring to be free. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. And I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Within and without, above and below, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. Without and within, below and above, yeah, yeah. East, west, north and south, I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Presence of my Lord of light and love, everything I find in tune with the divine. And here we stand in line, waiting for some sacred sign. But to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. And I am the light within your soul. In the essence of truth and right, love makes the circle whole. And when I call to thee and come on bended knee, surrender to the all-pervading light and love. Reflections of the one surrounding me with love. For to find the balance is the purpose of this time. To restore the balance of the universal mind. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, Holy Way of the Most High. Om Shabbat sense your presence. Om Shabbat Shalom, holy angel of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom, I sense your presence. I sense your presence.
Thank you for joining me here tonight on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and I am your hostess tonight. The music you were listening to there at the beginning of the show is I Sense Your Presence. It's by Shemshai, a group that I met in the Arizona area when I was living there and was spending some time off and on in the Sedona region. And now they're, of course, traveling all over the world and having a blast and doing their passion, no doubt about that. Welcome back to those that are returning, as well as those that have tuned in here for the very first time tonight. Here at Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I look at the different ways that compassion exists in our lives, how to remove our blocks, resistances, frustrations, and more. Some weeks I'm discussing different aspects of compassion, how it's in our life, how it affects our life, and the different areas of compassion. And then sometimes I've got exercises going on in the shows and practical implementations of this work. And many times I've got guests on the show, which has certainly been the case this year. We've had some fantastic guest here, and already lining up another set of fantastic guests coming up for next year as well, and showing how their work complements and fits in with compassion, because it never really is about one thing, is it? It's always about that integration of these different pieces that people are presenting and doing and focusing on, and how they come together in our lives in multiple ways so that we start to see that bigger picture that's happening there. And then also I highlight different musical guests along the way. Of course, Jill Mattson was on last week with us, and we were highlighting some different things there. And then we've had Claire Hedin, which came on about a year ago, the end of 2012, and then Stephen Halpern, Peter Cater, both on earlier this year. And if you missed their shows, go ahead and go back into the archives. Jill's musical show was actually earlier in the year, but she was doing some more work with vocals as well last week. And then also in my personal work, I focus on helping people find and use compassion in their everyday lives. I've created the Genesis Clearing Statement, which some of you have experienced on previous shows. And if you missed that, Kevin Baer did a great interview of me working with the statement, and that was last fall. So check around September of 2012 for that in our archives. And then I've also authored four books. The most recent are You, Me, Life, Dreams, and its companion workbook, as well as the first two I put out, which is Activating Compassion and its companion workbook. And I'm going to tell you about some things that are happening with those books towards the end of the show. I want you to stay tuned for that. In addition, I've created the Compassion Tour, which is a multi-state nationwide tour that includes workshops, retreats, seminars, book signings, and fundraising events. And I'm already working on the tour for 2014. You can follow all of the events to register for the tour at jessieannicholsgeorge.eventbrite.com. And there's also an option there for gifting the tour. So maybe you can't make it out to the events directly, but you'd like to support me getting out to some of the fundraisers or other things to help get my message out there. And you can gift any amount that you choose to do so for that. Now, just a reminder, if you enjoy the show this evening, you want to make certain you tell your friends and your family, share it out there on the social media network, because I always find that when I share things on my, for example, Facebook page or wherever, it always seems like there's somebody out there that's the message that they need. So I believe in just kind of putting it out there, and you never know whose life you're going to help change as a result of that. Now, they can catch the archives, by the way, right here at the same link, and that's available immediately after the show is over. So then they can catch it, and they're available ongoing. There's no limitation of when they can come back in and listen to it. Now, before we get started, as those of you that have listened to the show before know, I like to start off with a little reading from the 72 Names of God, Technology for the Soul. It's by Yehuda Berg, a very interesting Kabbalah master. And those that have listened, they realize I really like Yehuda's work because it's very much like my own work in the sense that he likes to take the big concepts, put them into everyday language, and get them into ways that we can grasp onto them. And I like to randomly open to see what the message is, because as we always know, it always applies, right? Whatever we need to know, we're going to get. So let's see what Yehuda has for us tonight. And, oh, this is going to be an interesting one, not one that we normally think about in this way. Okay, and his message tonight, the common word of God in this one, is fertility. Now, sometimes a couple finds it difficult to conceive a child. This name is the spiritual DNA of fertility. And the insight he gives with this is, if we believe erroneously that we are the ultimate source of our abundance, blessings, and miracles, then our lives inevitably become as barren as a desert. Souls become sterile due to inflated self-importance. Giving birth to children, giving birth to new ideas, or giving birth to a business solution all require the divine force of fertility. Fertile minds and fertile bodies bring forth the kinds of miracles and blessings that lead us to fulfillment in the deepest sense. Acknowledging and appreciating this profound truth kickstarts this name and launches it into action. And the meditation that he provides with this is, abundance and fruitfulness fill your being. You are imbued with the power of procreation. You can also meditate upon others who are trying to start a family. And I find it very interesting that this came up right now, because we're coming up on a new moon, and the new moon energy actually is really conducive to some of this breaking through and rebirthing and, you know, kind of being procreative in a way. And that really actually kicks in coming up on, I want to say it is December 13th, when we've got a cool little influence that's happening at that time, which is actually a Friday the 13th, believe it or not. And the influences that are happening at that time are all about bringing out the feminine power of creation. So it's really interesting to have this come up in this time frame so close to all of these other influences that are happening. And I think that this is going to play in as well with our guest tonight, because we're talking about words and how words empower us. And we're also talking about how, in a sense, those words can make our life very fertile. So it's another piece of that. Now, a little insight and some things to think about here before we go to a break, as we delve into tonight's topic. How powerful are the words that we use? Does the language we use program our subconscious? Do words have the power to truly change our behavior? Words can be one of those tricky areas. On one hand, phrasing things in a certain way and certain patterns with certain specific vowel and consonant sounds seems to have a certain level of power. We see this in affirmations, prayers, incantations, etc. However, in another sense, words are more of something related to human existence, more so than soul experience. Yet still the human existence and soul experience are interwoven, and words have been used to connect or separate the two. No matter how we view it, the human existence is something our soul is experiencing. So what runs through our brain impacts in ways beyond just the physical. I am embracing the polarities here. On one hand, I feel that words need to be chosen wisely because of the impact they seem to have on how we function. Yet on the other hand, I'm not a super technical stickler about them either, since it is what we are trying to express and mean that seems to be more important in the bigger picture of things. And of course, as we know, one single word can have different meanings for multiple people. So keeping that in mind as well. If we are picturing what we mean, the universe will still get the message no matter what the words are. On the other hand, using words that conflict with what we are picturing can create a different energy than what we are trying to send out or make the message fuzzy. What I do know is that words carry their own vibration of energy, as do all things. They can be deduced to numbers which carry vibrational energies. They are used to help our brains transform the mental understanding of something into more spiritual process, and also the spiritual process into the mental understanding. Our brain, like a computer, is a great translator of things. The level it processes at would put anything electronic to seem like a mere microcosm of its capabilities, even if all of the computer and processing equipment in the world were able to be combined together. This is why we can literally evoke the power of God with mere words, which is why they can do so much more than just hurt feelings or heal, and why NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming, has grown in popularity with the increasing spiritual development on our planet. When we look at the different components of words, there is so much more than a mere word itself. Kate Ellis has learned the power of positive word games for self-empowerment. In her work, she helps people in all areas of life and has this to say, "Language programs our subconscious, which directs us to successfully achieve our desires or, if used negatively, to possibly limit our goals. Words are powerful tools and used properly will enhance self-esteem and sets you up on a course for success in every area of your life." Now, while I also know that intent and other things will also play into words, it is interesting to look at words from this programming ability. I think of all of the money that is spent on weight loss products, stress-reducing products, things to help you build your finances or to be successful, and then I think of how simple words could make the deeper transformations to allow these things to be more lasting in our life. Let's face it, marketing has been using the power of words to influence us for ages. Political figures have been using them to control or influence people for quite some time as well. Many products are termed smart whatever, smartphones, smart cars, and many of these also have aspects to control us. With all this external programming, it is important to know how to do our own programming to remain connected with our higher, true soul self. And how much attention do you pay to the words that you use? Are you spending conscious time doing your own personal programming to remain spiritually connected? Have you found your own set of power words that allows you to shift out of anxiousness, stressed, worried states of being? This week, our guest focuses on a component of compassion that is related to the aspect in my books of no more pain. This reminds us that as we grow, develop, and go through life, that we don't have to suffer through it, that we can help ourselves and others in a way that is enjoyable. I'm going to take a short break, and when I return, I'm going to have Kate Ellis with us, and she will be sharing her work in word empowerment. The song I've got for you during our break tonight is called Dreaming with Wings, also known as Freedom, Freedom. It's by Claire Hedin. And again, Claire was on at the very last show in December of last year. If you'd like to check out more of her music and her work, you can do so at www.clairehedin.com. That's CLAREHEDIN.com. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Talking, talking.
It's in my nature.
Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. My name is Jesse Ann Nichols George, and I am your hostess this evening. You were just listening to a song by Claire Hedin, and that is called Dreaming with Wings, also known as Freedom Freedom. And again, if you'd like to check out more of her work, you can do so at www.clairehedin.com. That's C-L-A-R-E-H-E-D-I-N.com. And I'd like to bring on my guest tonight, Kate Ellis. And she is a certified clinical counseling hypnotherapist. She's been doing that for over 25 years. She's the vice president of the Arizona Society of Professional Hypnotherapists. Kate is instructed at Scottsdale Community College, Moraine Valley Community College, St. Javier's University in Illinois. Her work includes personal development, creative visualization, self-esteem assertiveness training, self-hypnosis and relationship development, behavior modification, including addictions, weight, anxiety, depression. And Kate encourages individuals to discover their own creative and intuitive abilities, self-empowerment, and actualizing their innate potentials. We're looking tonight at her work with these areas and the use of word empowerment. You can learn also more about her work at www.thehealingquest.com, as well as www.empowerpuzzles.com. And let me get her mic opened up here tonight. Hi, Kate. It's absolutely wonderful to have you here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour.
Oh, thank you. I'm very honored to be your guest. What a wonderful time, midnight, my favorite hour.
I love this time of night as well. There's nothing like bringing a little energy to the middle of the night.
This is true. Well, I say I don't wake until the crack of noon.
That's right. I would love for you, Kate, to start off by, you know, sharing with us a little about your journey. What brought you into this work? What got you up to doing what you're doing now? And give us a little insight to who Kate is.
Oh, wow. I guess I can start from the beginning. It may sound a little odd or strange to some people. I tend to stay on the clinical side and don't necessarily reveal all of my journey unless people already know. I was born a clairvoyant medium, and I was really amazed on information that I would give people or talking to people who have passed over and giving information, how they would be so happy and then turn around and just deny the experience ever happened. And this was quite curious to me. And it was about the age of 11 that I realized that other people truly did not have access to the different levels of information that I was. I have a very scientific bent of my brain, and so I began studying every ology under the sun, from archaeology, geology, anthropology, psychology, medicine, neurology, and again, everything under the sun. And that led me into medicine, which I had made a career in, as well as in psychology, where I had discovered hypnotherapy and how awesome this particular methodology is for quickly accessing core or root issues of people with whatever they have. My practice specializes in anxiety disorders, and that's kind of a large spectrum, but I help people who have deal with anxiety and panic attacks. Anxiety and panic attacks are one of the worst things a human being can truly experience. I say it's something that you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy, only a child molester, the worst of the worst. And I found that I had a special talent or ability in understanding psychology and hypnotherapy in correcting the disorder. I currently have actually an educational initiative for the medical and mental health communities because currently or traditionally they've only dealt with management of anxiety issues or anxiety panic attacks. Now, some doctors, and one of the things that kind of horrifies me is that traditional regular PCs or your general doctor, 80% of them are managing anxiety and depressive issues, and they're doing it with medications. Now, I am a fan of medications. If I have something that I can't get rid of naturally, you know I'm going to take an antibiotic, or if I break a bone, I'm going to see an orthopedist. Or if I need surgery, I'm certainly going to see a surgeon. So I embrace both Western and Eastern, all sorts of modalities of medicine. However, for some reason, the mainstream has not realized or understood that anxiety panic attacks are totally correctable. In the over 24 years I have been in practice, I have yet to meet a client who's come to my office within the three sessions that I did not help them correct their anxiety panic attack.
That's amazing.
So it's very amazing. And, you know, what's really intriguing is if you look at the statistics, 117 million Americans suffer with one form of anxiety or panic attack. Often people become aware of an anxiety or panic attack with the number one phobia, which is public speaking. And they can't do it. And often they'll seek either a person such as myself, or they'll begin to go to Toastmasters and become comfortable with it. But with some people, it's so debilitating that they have to seek either medical or mental health professionals. Now, Xanax is a wonderful medication that helps deal with the symptoms. I'm a person, I deal with the symptoms, but not only that, we correct it at the subconscious level where it's at. You know, anxiety panic attack it's a syndrome called the fight or flight syndrome, and it's absolutely a wonderful thing. A lot of people don't think so who are experiencing it, but if you think of it in this manner, the fight or flight system is 200,000 years in the making. It is our survival instinct. So, you know, as human beings have evolved and come along, we've learned that if you take a step off of a precipice, off of a mountain, you're going to die. And that would not be good. And there are all sorts of different things that we have learned that has become what we call instinctual, to things that we avoid. Unfortunately, as we have evolved and as we're in our current 21st century society, when a boss threatens you with you better get that in or you're going to be fired or demoted, to have a panic attack simply does not help. However, the evolution of our instincts, survival, right? I mean, if you're fired, how are you going to pay your mortgage or your rent or feed your children and all the different consequences of losing your job, especially in today's economy? It's, you know, we hold on to that job as though it's very precious.
I think that's true, and I think that is an increasing thing, and I'm looking forward to delving even more into this whole stress factor further into the show, because I think this
right.
is
and
that,
I
think this
go
is
ahead,
I think this is something that's definitely surfacing up for a lot of people, And like you say, it's probably one of the worst feelings there is, because I remember going through a period of waking up daily every morning with anxiety attacks.
Yeah, so again, like I said, you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy, because, I mean, the symptoms, again, this is very powerful instincts that are welling up. And for a lot of people, I mean, it really feels as though you are dying. And a lot of people will end up at a hospital or their doctors, and at the hospital they'll do all the proper tests, which I'm an advocate for, because there could be something else going on. Excuse me. But when they finally get down to the point, oh, you're just having an anxiety or panic attack, then they will put you on different medications. And if a person is very unfortunate, they'll be put on anti-anxiety or antidepressants, SSRI and uptake inhibitors, psychotropic medications, which radically change the brain chemistry. And what it does, in essence, is it masks the symptoms. It doesn't correct the symptoms. And this is what I am working on, the educational initiative for the medical and mental health communities, is that this is correctable, that if you're going to give a medication to a client, give them something such as a Valium or Xanax just to help them get through until they see a specialist. And just like in any area, Ms. George, there are specialists, such as, you know, if you go to your general doctor, your general practitioner, and you are expressing heart issues, you're going to be sent to a cardiologist. If perhaps you're having problems with your foot, you're going to see a specialist called a podiatrist. Now, in mental health, not every psychotherapist, not every hypnotherapist, not every psychiatrist is aware that anxiety panic attacks are correctable.
And it's kind of odd. I think, you know, there's that blend between, yes, there's taking something to maybe get through a certain period of time, but then the aspect is the root issue is still there. And there, in my opinion, there's not a drug that can heal something that's really truly emotional or soul-coded or, you know, is really an issue that we have to address and face the fears on. That's a process.
Yes. Yeah, no, definitely it's a process, but there's a root core issue having to do with anxiety and panic attacks, and it's quite simple. The core issue is I do not feel safe. I am not in control in my world or in the world. That's really the issue. And once you bring a person both on a cognitive level, a conscious level, and the subconscious level, because, you know, the subconscious is that mechanism of mind activity in which allows us to smoothly operate in the world. And what I mean by that is, take, for instance, getting in your vehicle to drive from, say, home to work or home to the store or somebody's house. When you get into your vehicle, you do not have to remember how to drive your car. You simply stick the key in the ignition and go. This is by rote. This is something that we've done through habituation. We've done it over and over again to where it becomes a very automatic mechanism. So that's how the subconscious, it holds this very important information, how to do things, such as when you go to brush your teeth, you don't have to remember which hand is the hand that brushes the teeth with. You simply grab it naturally. So this is how the subconscious allows you to smoothly operate in the world. It keeps information below the level of cognizance or consciousness, and anytime you need information, it brings it up. And again, you don't have to think about it. You just simply stick the key in the ignition, and you do what you do to drive safely to wherever you're going.
Right. It's amazing the difference is in there, and I think that there's definitely certain times of year and things like this time of year where this stress factor, this anxiety factor is coming out so much more with people.
Absolutely. And, you know, it all comes down to the basics of what you're talking about. And I just really love the show and about the power of words, because really all the work that I'm doing, that what we're talking about right now, comes down to the power of words and what you're saying to yourself, such as going into that meeting and thinking about going to that meeting. Think about this. It's a simple thought. A simple thought can either empower or disempower you at any given moment. And that's what I so much enjoy about the work that I do, not only through my clinical practice, but also through the Words That Empower series. It works with the structure of language. And when I was listening to what you were saying about intention regarding words and that the universe knows what you mean, you definitely have an absolutely valid point. However, one thing that one needs to consider is that, think about this. When we're younger in school, I don't know if you had this experience, but a lot of us does. You ask the teacher, how do you spell the word discipline? And the teacher will say, look it up in the dictionary. And you'll say, but teacher, I don't know how to spell the word. And so what happens is they says, well, you'll figure it out. And so we go to the dictionary and we look up, and eventually we stumble upon the word discipline. And then we read what the word discipline means. This is now hardwired into the subconscious mind. So that anytime you use the word discipline, even though you may have different meanings and meanings, like you had mentioned in your talk earlier, still the subconscious knows the difference. When I want to teach somebody the power of using words incorrectly, I have them perform this experiment. I say to them, I would like you to say the word out loud, or the sentence out loud, I have a problem. Now, after you say that, I want you to notice your energy levels, how you feel, if there's any tension in your body. They take note, and then I say, I want you to now say, I have a challenge. And again, go through the same process of noting how you feel, your energy levels, and any tension in your body. 99% of people will report that when they say, I have a problem, their energy level drops. There's tension in either the neck, the shoulders, the jaw, the belly, the lower back, and they have this kind of defeatist sort of sense or attitude that tends to overshadow them. However, when most people say, I have a challenge, their energy levels rise, the sense of their creativeness, their creative mind activates, and their energy levels come up in a very positive way. Now, sometimes we use these words interchangeably, problem or challenge. What's important about using the correct word is, again, if you notice, I mean, look at the difference between those two words and how it physically affected your body. We are a body, mind, and spirit, or a body, mind, and energy source, however you want to look at it. You cannot separate them. We are a spirit having a human experience. So the mind affects the body, thoughts affect the body. And so if you want to, in whatever area you want to be successful in, often the proper language is important. And the way to find out if you're using the effective language, whether it's in an affirmation or what have you, is noting how you feel. I say that there's particular words that I ask people to work on avoiding or using them as red flags in terms of understanding how they're feeling inside. And those words are try, should, hope, can't, and wish. All of these particular words have a value at different times and different points in our life, such as the word try. The word try is a wonderful word for any person under the age of 10. The reason for this is when we're younger, we tend to be little perfectionists, a lot of us are, and we are drawing something or making our letters or what have you when we're young, and we draw outside of the line or we don't do it right, and we get frustrated. And so a teacher or a parent will come up to you and say, look, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Have you heard that?
Absolutely.
Okay. And so what the word try is doing is it's giving the child permission to fail. Failure is very important in the evolution and maturity of a human being. So it gives you permission to fail. So after the age of 10, though, you don't want to give yourself permission to fail. You want to give yourself permission to succeed. So what do? Do you use the word try? No. Do your best to avoid it. Think about it. Be more mindful. How about I will do my best? Because if you think about it, if you break that down to another level, aren't we all doing the best we can with what we know at any given time in our lives?
It's something that I'm saying for people all the time is that, you know, we think back and people wonder why I don't live with regrets. I've made mistakes. There's no doubt about it. I haven't made the wisest decision along the way, but I did the best I could under those circumstances because I didn't have knowledge 20 years ago that I have now to work with. And
absolutely, yeah.
And to not judge is one of the things I tell people. You know, don't judge what might seem like a very simple, basic thing to you. If you had been through every experience that that person had been through and taken all the steps that they had gone through, you probably would have came to the same conclusion or decision.
That's correct. And there's, you know, there's a difference. Again, there's a difference between judgment and discernment. Again, I am called a semantics queen, but you know what? Words and language are the tools that I use in my office. And when you understand how you're using them to either empower or disempower you, you generally will not forget. So again, the word try is good for anybody under 10 years old. So I say use that as a red flag. When you say, I'm going to try to do this, try to do that, that gives you an opportunity to step back and to take a look at what you really mean and what you really intend, and to pay attention to that. Like the word should. The word should is a challenge. I find it myself still for many years, working that out of my language. I will substitute it with ought often. However, when you're using the word should a lot, it will often be synonymous with people who are having issues with procrastination. When you're using the word should, often what you do is you draw up sense or feelings or ancient guilt that you have. And guilt is also an opportunity to see. I look at everything as an opportunity. You can look at it as an opportunity or as a failure. And, of course, there are failures in life. I've failed many times. However, I've also looked at those failures, and I looked at the opportunity that it provided. So when you're using the word should and then you're hitting that guilt button, you know, guilt is the opportunity to look at your foundational belief systems. Our foundational beliefs are things that we're taught by our parents, by our culture, in the community in which we live in. It basically is our guide to what we believe is right or wrong. So if you have feelings of guilt, it gives you the opportunity to perhaps expand your knowledge on that, on what is right or what is wrong. And maybe you either A, need to stop doing what you're doing because it's against your deepest beliefs of what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong, or it gives you the opportunity to expand on that and say, you know, just like let's take an innocuous situation here. In the Catholic religion, there was a tenet that not to eat meat on Fridays, to eat vegetables or fish, but primarily fish, and the Catholic church had promoted fish. And you feel guilty about that. And then as you're going along in life, you learn more about your religion and about how it came and the different tenets and stuff like that, because that wasn't the word of God. That was the word of the church, okay? So you learn that there was a discernment here, that this was actually something that the church had stated, not that that your God had stated. And then you learn there was a period of time where fishermen, where people were raising more and more animals, and they were eating more beef and sheep and goats and all this sort of stuff, and the fishermen were suffering. And so in order to help the fishermen, what the church did was say, you know what, let's enact one day that is meatless. Gives you a completely different perspective on that. You haven't created a sin or a mortal sin. So it now gives you the opportunity to say, well, gee, I can choose to continue to feel guilty that I forgot it was Friday and I had a hamburger, or that you just gained new learning and you can expand your belief systems of what you believe is right or wrong.
Yes, definitely. And I think that this is a great perspective to open up. And I was thinking, wow, it's amazing the nature of the action or thing that we're dealing with when we're using certain words. And that's something that I haven't heard a lot of people touch on. Like you mentioned, the word should ties into procrastination. And to stop and do that introspective look at ourselves and say, well, why are we procrastinating? Why are we resisting? Is it because our body's calling out for something more and it needs rest? Is it because we're out of balance, we're not honoring something? What's behind it? Are we feeling guilty for it? So this is, I think, a very interesting kind of eye-opening thing, because I find this is the type of thing where we'll go through certain phases where we're using should a lot or can't a lot or whatever word a lot.
Right, and I, when people say the word can't, I ask them, okay, be mindful. Either are you saying I can't because you absolutely cannot do something, or you won't. And more often
right.
than not, it's they don't want to do it. And again, not only is should and find and paying attention to your language, and when you're using that a lot, being also a symptom of procrastination, but procrastination is the threshold to depression. Simply put, depression is anger turned in toward the self. It's being upset. It's being bitter. It's being disappointed because there are certain expectations, whether correct or not, that we have that we haven't fulfilled. And that is, again, everything has a core root, and that's the core root of most people with depression. Now, I'm not talking about a clinical type of depression, which 3% of the United States population has. So only 3% of people have what's called organic depression, where it needs to be medicated. And that's important, if they do. However, most depression is, again, it's a sense of self-betrayal. So the easiest way to begin to move out of depression is to begin to tackle your procrastination and paying attention to the word should when it comes up. So what I tell my clients is, so you notice you're sitting watching TV and you look over and you see that your receptacle needs to be taken out, that the garbage is piling up and it needs to go out. You can either say, you know what, I'll take this out at the commercial break, or I'll take it out in the morning on my way to work. Here's the important part. You come home from work and you see that you have forgotten to take out the garbage. You put down your purse and your briefcase. You do not say that choice word to yourself that, we all have, when we're upset or disappointed with ourselves, we all have a word that we call ourselves. I won't say some of the four-letter words or some of those other words, but, say idiot or stupid or whatever it is. Say you're calling yourself an idiot. You don't even go there. You put your stuff down, you tie it up, and you take it out immediately. And you begin to break the bond of procrastination. On my intake form, I ask, do you procrastinate? And more often than not, people will check it off. This is actually a trick question. The reason for that is that a lot of people will say that they're a procrastinator when they're actually a person who works well under pressure. Some people work very well under pressure, and they will wait to the last minute, and they get it done, dun, 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 and it's all done and over with. But because they have these messages from other people, get it done now and you don't have to worry about it later, or maybe a parent had chastised them, or maybe with homework in school, they now have this belief about themselves, a judgment about themselves that they procrastinate. That is, I find it 75% not true with most people who I meet with. the idea of your show in terms of compassion, because really compassion starts within. You must be compassionate with yourself. You know, we have a relationship with ourselves, just like we have with other people. So when somebody disappoints you, say you have a friend who calls you up and says, you know, it's been a long time since we've seen each other. Why don't we meet at our favorite restaurant for happy hour? And you're like, oh, you know what? Cool. Let's meet Friday at 5 o'clock. So you make this appointment, and Friday comes along, and you're there at 5 o'clock, and your friend is no show, no call, and you're worried. And eventually you get in contact with each other, and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. There was a late meeting, and I had to go. Let me make it up to you. Let's meet next Friday at 5 o'clock, and I'm buying the drinks. And you're relieved, and you're like, okay, cool. I'm glad everything's okay. And so you're waiting, and then next Friday comes along, and your friend is, again, no show, no call. And you're a little bit concerned, but now you're a little peeved. You're like, what am I, chopped liver here? You can't give me a call. And so maybe you wait for that other person to call, and they get a hold of you and say, oh, I'm so sorry. The babysitter didn't show up, and I had to run home, and I completely forgot about it. Please forgive me. Look, let's meet next Friday, and not only am I buying the drinks, but I'll get the lobster. You get the lobster. I'm buying the whole thing. And you're like, okay, somewhat relieved, but still a little upset that they didn't reach out and call you sooner, and you spent an hour maybe waiting at the restaurant. So now the week is going on, and you're starting to wonder, should I call them, remind them? And you're thinking, well, wait a minute, they're, you know, old enough to know better. And so you now doubt going to happen next Friday. The same thing with the self. If you state that you're going to do something and then you don't follow through, you begin to break down the bonds of self-trust. Just like you did with that friend. And just like that friend, it will probably take a year for that person to follow through on their word in order for you to feel comfortable again that you can trust what this person says to you is true, in fact. And the same thing within ourselves. We have to build those bonds of trust. And the easiest way to do that and not to second guess yourself and to move out of a place called depression or anxiety is to follow through on your word and to pay attention to what you're saying to yourself. You have to ask yourself, if what I say to myself was said to me by somebody I care about or somebody I love, would that hurt? Would that hurt my feelings, or would they possibly get a bloody nose?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we have that relationship with ourselves, and quite frankly, we're our own best friends. And so you have to make peace within the self, follow through on your word, be compassionate with yourself. You know, you mentioned earlier that you've made mistakes. All of us have made mistakes, but I like to hyphenate that word, mistake, because often it really is a mistake. Take a miscommunication or a confusion, something we didn't quite readily understand, and to have compassion for yourself and realize that, again, you are a spirit having a human experience, and that even at certain levels of our being, we are perfect, whole, and complete. The human part of us is in a state of evolution. We're moving and maturing through this life.
Yeah, and it is, and it's interesting when we start to break some of the words down, how they can really, pop out at us or shift our things. And I don't often use the word mistake because I guess there's a aspect of me that feels like nothing's truly a mistake.
Correct.
You know, it's all helping me grow and develop and open and learn and. I oftentimes will say I've had a lot of learning experiences along the way.
But that's because you're compassionate with yourself. You've learned how to be compassionate with yourself and realize you are a human becoming. You're in a process. You're not static. You're not, in some sort of form of completion. You know, a lot of people will, say, yeah, you're so, you know, smart or wise or what have you. I'm like, yeah, well, if I was so smart or wise, I would burst into a ball of fire or light and I'd exit this universe. So all of us are in a state of evolution.
I'll keep that in mind when I get ready to exit.
There you go.
I'm going to go out with a real flame.
Yeah, you know, I have found, which is interesting, the medium part of me is that I have yet spoke to a dead person who did not realize that it was their time to go, no matter how old they were.
You know, I think that's a interesting aspect because I think, you know, it does, and it's interesting if we relate some of that to, like, language and our subconscious and there's a whole language that goes on within us that we know these different things. We know when the time is there. We know when it's happening. And no matter what our ego wants to do, we know. And
true.
Even if
this is true. But for those who are left behind, who are carrying the pain and saying, why now? It's too soon, especially if it's a child. I mean, it's not something that anybody wishes any parent to go through. But I have just spoken to so many levels of spirits who have different reasons for coming into this world. You know, you may or may not agree with this. This is just something that I've learned, and it may or may not be true. However, I've learned from speaking to spirit and to guides and stuff like that, everybody has chosen to come here for their own reasons. One, they have a reason. There's something that they want to experience. And, you know, Richard Bach wrote a wonderful book years ago called Illusions, Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. And it's a great book. It's a novel, a short novel. It's one of those, you read in an afternoon sort of deal. But he so beautifully explains in that book, why would somebody choose to be born to, say, alcoholic parents or choose to go through certain experiences? And it's so beautifully explained so easily in a fictionalized sort of form. It's absolutely wonderful. And this is actually something that I've experienced myself in communicating with people who have passed, that, you know, we choose the time, the place, the parents, which is often an agreement amongst spirits that we wanted to have this experience together. But you know what? There's another side to this. You need to make a deal with divine source in order to be able to come back here. And often, we have purposes in this life. Everybody has a purpose in this life. And often we don't know what that is, especially the purpose that we make a deal with divine source. You never know if that purpose is, say, you're in a checkout line and you get up to your turn and you say something kindly to the clerk, like, what a beautiful smile or what a nice shirt you have, and you didn't know that she was thinking, you know what, I don't want to live anymore, and she was going to go home and do something awful. Yet you took the time to just say something nice, and it completely changed her perception, her dynamic. It gave her pause to think differently.
It is amazing, these small gestures. I actually talk about some of those types of things in my book, Activating Compassion, of how we don't oftentimes get to see that bigger result or picture or cascading event. And going ahead and doing that kind action anyways, you know, whether we're going to see the result or not, literally does change lives, and it really does save lives.
And I must say, the experiences that I've had in life has allowed me also to develop my compassion. When I was married a lifetime ago, my husband had, previous to our marriage, had injured several discs. Several discs. And there were times that he would be in pain and he wouldn't be able to help out or go to work. And, you know, after a number of years of this going on, you know, I thought after a while, you know, he's just being lazy. He just doesn't want to do it. And then I had a horrific accident that actually is where I came up with the idea of the Words That Empower series. And, yeah, I had an injury that I could barely walk for 6 months, and then I was only in abject pain for 2 solid years, day in and day out, and it took about 6 years for my back to heal, and they didn't even know if my back would actually heal from this injury. I called up my ex-husband, who we remained friends after a while after the divorce, and I apologized to him. I understood what it was like to have such back pain that it completely takes over every aspect of your life. Even coughing was out of the question. Then I went through an experience, another physical experience, where I had contracted this disorder called BIF disease, or B19 parvovirus, from a pediatric patient of mine. And what it is in a pediatric patient, in a child, it's very much like flu symptoms, and it lasts for about 2 weeks. If you're over 20, in a male, it'll last maybe 3 weeks. In a female, maybe a little bit longer. Well, I had Fitz disease from hell, according to my doctor. I had this disorder from March through October of a particular year. And basically what it is bilateral rheumatoid arthritis in the joints. And what I mean by bilateral is if I'm having pain in the thumb joint, it's in the other thumb joint. If I'm having pain in one shoulder, it's in the other shoulder. And I'm not a crier, but I would literally, when I had to get up, and it was very difficult, I would burst into tears. It was so painful. And I never, ever looked at my rheumatoid arthritic patients or people who have arthritic issues the same ever again. I gained, again, another level of insight and compassion because of what I've gone through. And just like in my practice, when I was younger, I went through depression. I went through anxiety, panic attacks. And I understand what they're about down to the deepest core issues. And I think maybe, I think in life sometimes we go through these experiences that allow us not only to be compassionate to our fellow loved ones and human beings, but also maybe to perfect a portion of ourselves. I don't know if I would be as good as a counselor and hypnotherapist if perhaps I did not go through those experiences.
I think there is some of that, especially those that are drawn to the healing fields. And you know, you do bring up an aspect of sometimes when we're discounting what somebody's doing and we don't realize, and then at some point we end up having an experience that really brings that lesson home. And I know that I have gone back to people in my past and said, I am so sorry, you know.
I have taken that opportunity. I think it's a gracious thing to do, especially, you know, if there were tensions or maybe misunderstandings, you know, to at least take that opportunity. It may or may not heal a relationship or a rift if there was one, but at least it was stated.
And as I say, that gesture, that act is an act of forgiveness, and it's about forgiving yourself first and foremost, as well as forgiving the other person. And it really helps give you the freedom to move on. Now, you did bring up your program, Kate, Words That Empower, and I would love for you to share more about what that program is all about.
Well, as I mentioned, I had developed that. It kind of came in one of those light bulb moments. When I was healing from that horrific back injury that I had. And one day I'm sitting down doing a word search puzzle, one of my favorite puzzles. You don't have to think, you just kind of do. So I'm doing these word search puzzles, believe it or not, on these deciduous trees of North America. And so I'm going, oak, maple, sugar maple, and all this sort of stuff. And it just occurred to me, gee, what if word search puzzles could be used as a teaching tool, because I remembered when I was a kid, when I was young and I was learning language, that my teacher would give me word search puzzles and I would learn how to spell and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And just this light bulb moment had come where I'm like, wait a minute. And I could use my background in psychology, hypnotherapy, neurolinguistic programming, and all this sort of stuff. And I designed that within the puzzles. And basically, what they are is a word search puzzle format. And I use that because a lot of our tapes and our learning are done in childhood. Basically, we're programmed by the age of 4 years old. So I use that to touch the inner child of a person. The word list is very unique. It's not a single word. They're word lines, actually, that I have in there. And what they are is properly created affirmations. Affirmations mean saying yes to yourself. And often, again, we're talking about giving permission to ourselves, permission to heal, permission to forgive, permission to be compassionate and to understand that you are a work in process, as it were, right? And so
yes.
I utilized all of these different things into a word search format, like one of the word search puzzles called Life is Safe. And I start with the one word line, in the infinity, the next word line, you are divinely guided, the next word line, divinely protected. And it goes on and on. And what you do is you read the word line list, which is a properly worded affirmation, and then you glance at the puzzle grid and you look at it for about 3 seconds. Believe it or not, by the glancing at the puzzle grid where the words are hidden in all different directions, just like a normal word search puzzle, and I explain it because not everybody I have found have done word search puzzles, especially if you were born from like 1980 and onward. They didn't necessarily use that structure in school so much anymore, or people who may be listening to this program perhaps who are from the UK or other parts of the world. A word search puzzle is basically words or word lines that are hidden in the grid, often in straight lines, and they're hidden forward, backward, horizontal, vertically. And so if you look at the puzzle grid, say you're looking at a square, the upper portion of the word grid, the grid itself represents the superconsciousness. The middle zone is consciousness, the lower zone subconscious, the left side is past, the right side is future, and other points at different things of basic psych 101. I am able to create these puzzles where I have these word lines specifically placed in the grid to help shift your perception. A lot of people don't realize that it takes 88 to 1,000 times in stating an affirmation or to begin to effectuate change. The reason for this is that we have to kind of change our perception. So, and what I tell my clients is it's not your thinking that needs to change. It's your perception about something. Once your perception changes, your thinking automatically follows, right? Like if, say, you were a child and you went on a roller coaster and you had a really bad experience. You were scared out of your wits on the roller coaster. Anytime roller coaster comes up from thence on, you're like, yeah, no, thank you, pass. I'm not going to go there. And then maybe at some point you're an adult, excuse me, and the opportunity comes. Maybe you're out with a date or the guy or something or a girl and you want to impress them and they say, hey, why don't we go on this roller coaster? And you're like, yeah, no, thanks. Like, come on, it's going to have to be fun. And you're like, you know, I don't want to appear, you know, you don't want to be, you don't want the moment to be awkward. And so you acquiesce to the request and you get on the roller coaster and you have a wonderful time. And now you have a different perception. You now have a choice to continue to view a roller coaster as an evil entity and something that you would never engage upon, or something that could be fun and adventurous. We have these scales, and if you look at one end of the scale, it being fear, and the other end of that same scale being excitement, you make a decision and a choice of how you're going to perceive something. So when you change your perception, your thinking automatically follows.
I think that that's really interesting, and we do. We do have these shifts in perception, and it does tremendously. It's kind of like in when I was, and what I read earlier at the beginning of the show too, is you can take the same word, roller coaster, in your example, and it's got multiple perceptions there. People kind of give it different meanings. That's a scary thing. That's a enjoyable thing. That's a fun thing. And there definitely shifts.
Oh, right. And that's a matter of experience. I ask people, a lot of people will stay stuck because they cling to a story. I was raped. I was brutalized. Mean words were said to me, or whatever it may be that keeps you stuck in the past. And I ask them, I says, a lot of people don't remember when they learned what hot was. And they look at me askance and like, what do you mean? I says, do you remember how old you were when you learned what hot was? And most people will say no, unless they had some sort of horrific experience, and often that's actually related to them by family members. But when we're growing up, when we're knee high to a grasshopper, our mom or our dad or guardian will say, don't touch the stove, it's hot, don't touch the radiator, it's hot, don't drink that drink, it's too hot, or the soup or whatever it is. And eventually at some point we take a sip of that soup and we burn our mouth, and now we learn what hot is. Most of us do not remember what taught us what hot is. Story is really not important. It's simply a vehicle.
And that's interesting that you brought that up, too, because so many people do tend to live in a story.
Correct.
And to talk by that, and they take on those roles. And I know in my book I address different roles that people take on with relationships, and they do, and I've seen people do that. They talk by whatever that role is. Now, you mentioned, was it 88 to 1,000 times?
88 to 1,000 times. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wanted to just make sure I heard that correctly, of stating an affirmation before it starts to bring about the change, which is amazing to me. That, we don't stop to think,
yeah.
And I think people give up easily in that process and of doing it, which is why I think some of the word games and things are really valuable, because you're getting this message in a level where you're actually focusing on that message for a period of time.
Yes, absolutely. And, also there's another level. I'm a Gemini. I can't help it. I think in many different in many different ways. So not only are you reading the word lines, which are a proper affirmation, but as you're focusing on the puzzle, it becomes a meditation. I hear so many people who believe that they cannot meditate. I just let that go, because a lot of people have different ideas of what meditation is. And really, what meditation is bringing one's focus down to a single thought, a single word, and a single chant or mantra or something like that. And this is what the puzzles provide. It provides also the ability to meditate. The technology, as I was talking about the grid, besides the different levels of consciousness and where I have the word lines placed, once you find a word line, I'm divinely guided, say, or I am brilliant, when you highlight, circle, or draw a line through the word line, I am now utilizing neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, as many people know it, which, as you know, is a way of anchoring information directly into the subconscious. That's why when you're working with one of my word search puzzles, you're actually anchoring this information in a more efficient manner than stating this affirmation 88 to 1,000 times. Literally, you're doing that with one puzzle. Now, I'm not saying that it's a magic wand and boop and everything's changed, but it helps you shift your perception so that you can make the changes and the shifts in your life that you want.
And this is going to be kind of a good transition into some stuff for you, too. When I was in college, I used to have severe test anxiety to the point that it put me on the probation list. I knew the information, just couldn't get it out. And I started doing meditation and visualization work, which I was very much into at that time, and learned how to relax my mind, because I learned, well, it only takes pretty much 1 to 3 times of reading this information or putting it in there for it to be in my mind. So if it's in my mind, that in that little amount of time, I just need to be able to recall it. It's just the anxiety, the stress is not allowing the information to be recalled into the conscious. And so I started doing visualization before I'd go in for my test. Well, I went from the probation list to the dean's list in one semester doing that. And where I'm going with that story is that through the puzzle games, what I see is that anytime we can make something fun, then our mind is going to become more receptive. You're going to drop the stress and you're going to drop the anxiety, and therefore it's going to be much easier for that message to enter our mind than even if we're sitting down concentrating saying, I'm going to repeat this affirmation 88 times.
Right. Absolutely, yeah. You know, learning can be fun. I mean, you know, learning comes in many different forms. But yes, it's a fun manner and format in which to do something, which is very intriguing. Especially us Americans, we have this work ethic where we got to work, and it's got to be challenging and difficult. And sometimes it's difficult to wrap one's mind around that. You know what? You can learn something, and it can be an enjoyable experience. We're so busy being productive 80 hours a week or whatever it is, we think if we're not doing something that it holds no value. But I say to you, okay, you stop sleeping for a week. There is value in doing nothing or what appears to be nothing. Right. Yes, we need that 8 hours of sleep in order for our brains to refresh and reset. You know, there's different levels of sleep that we go through. The first level of sleep is processing. And what happens is that your brain is literally processing information. It is similar to a computer getting rid of data that you are aware of that you don't need to pay attention, that you don't need to retain, such as you're sitting at a restaurant and there's a window in front of you and there's all these cars going down the street. Your subconscious knows how many cars have gone down the street, how many people were talking on the cell phone, the color of the car, how many people were in the car, and it's not important data that we need to retain. So what happens is the brain will begin deleting this innocuous information that we don't care about. Also, during this first layer of sleep, we are putting information into what I call temporary files. If you consider the subconscious as being a giant filing system, it has a file under fear, a file under learning new recipes, a file under I learned a new math equation or I learned a new concept, and so it goes into the temporary files. If you get the proper amount of sleep and you're able to get into what's called the delta theta level of sleep, what happens is then this information goes into the permanent files. Before you get to that level of mind activity, and the brain is always active, that's why I say to people, you know, give yourself a break. You may be doing meditation fine. This is, but I'm still thinking. I says, look, you will stop thinking when you're worm food, when you're 6 feet under the ground. Otherwise, the mind is active all the time. So you may be very well doing it right. Your perception, though, of what you thought, maybe other people's experiences or stuff like that may be, you know, and again, there's a reason why it's called practice, because it takes time to slow the thoughts down in order to bring it down to a singular focus and stuff like that. And one of the most interesting things I bet you've discovered with meditation that they teach monks, which this is their job, is when you begin to meditate and when you allow the mind to focus on one particular thing, all of a sudden, after you've emptied the mind just like a vessel, all of a sudden you have this space, and in this space erupts the creative mind, that creative portion of your mind, such as like when you're dreaming. when you're dreaming, when you're at this level of mind activity or called REM sleep, what is going on is your brain is coming up with solutions and resolutions to issues and problems that you have. Very much like meditation, when you reach a certain level of mind activity, all of a sudden solutions come to mind or your intuitiveness increases. And so you're not supposed to pay attention to that when you're at least a monk learning how to do this, because you're, have you found that?
That the solutions start showing up? Absolutely.
Yep, solutions as well as your intuition increases. And what I tell people is, look, this will happen. And so what you can do is, because every thought that you're thinking, you're giving a directive to your subconscious mind. And again, your subconscious mind is that level of mind activity that allows you to smoothly operate in the world. The conscious mind is that portion of the brain or mind activity that allows you to focus in the outside world, that allows you to respond to the outside world. Your subconscious allows you to smoothly respond. You don't have to remember how to do something, how to brush your teeth. You simply go through the motions of doing it. So what you do is you say to yourself, I will remember this at the appropriate time. So you've now given a directive to your subconscious mind, and it will. It will allow you to remember this material or information at the appropriate time, and so you can let it go and get back into your practice of meditation.
It's great. It's absolutely great. And I think learning and through practice, programming this, you know, as we're going to sleep or things too, that whatever we need to remember, we will do so at the appropriate time.
Right. Yeah, and when I have a client who have, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, for those that like to work with dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and again, you're always programming yourself. So if you don't remember your dreams, you can state to yourself, I will remember helpful dreams. Because it
right.
could be that you put up a block because maybe you were having nightmares some years ago and you're like, oh, gosh, you know, I can't deal with this. I don't understand this. And so basically what will happen is we will avoid those issues or things in our life that cause us additional stress. So you might not know where it began, but as I tell my clients, you know what? Your power is always in the present moment. You cannot show me 10 minutes ago. Now, you might be able to show me a picture, but that's not 10 minutes ago. And you certainly can't show me 10 minutes from now, because 10 minutes from now is being created by our combination of the past and what we're doing right now. So all you truly have is the present moment. And it's a beautiful thing about life, in that we can always make new decisions and new choices in the here and now. You don't have to flagellate yourself, you know that you've done something wrong, or, oh, shoot, you know, I didn't want to, you know, overdrink again, or I didn't want to cut myself again, or I didn't want to do this or that. I deal with all sorts of clients. I'm like, you know what? That was in the past. You can make a new decision now. And that's where your power is always, in the
yeah.
present moment.
Now, Kate, you've got some great exercises that were listed in your articles tab on empower puzzles. And I wanted to get to this because we've been talking about the stress and we've been talking about how the words come together for us. And I think these things all interrelate, especially this time of year where the stress levels are higher and the anxieties are higher and people have been feeling very uncertain. And, you know, I think that you've got a great exercise called Conquer and Control Being Overwhelmed. And I would love
okay.
for you to
yes.
lead us through that and give people this experience so they have something here that, especially in these times where it can get a little chaotic this year, or it can get a little stressful with the turning of another year, or, you know, there's so many things that come up, right? Holidays are our time we remember people that have passed on, and that can be stressful, or there's tensions being around family or whatever the situation is for people right now. I think this would be a great one to go through.
You know, I was looking through the articles on the Healing Quest website, and I didn't see exactly that particular one. Now, I do have the Eye of the Storm. I do have the Reset Button Technique with that. So that one, I looked, and I couldn't quite find it. I wasn't quite sure what it was. But let's talk about Eye of the Storm in terms of being overwhelmed with a lot of things going on. And, you know, this may sound counterintuitive, but bear with me for a moment. Eye of the Storm is where you're doing a physical type of exercise, mental and physical exercise, where you imagine with every sense that you have, meaning all the five senses, your internal visualization, your taste, touch, sight, sound, all this sort of stuff. And you imagine that you are in a tornado or a hurricane, and you imagine this stuff all circulating around you, and things are coming at you, and you're ducking, and you're moving, and all this sort of stuff, and the feelings of being, you know, I'm not safe and being overwhelmed. And then what I suggest is you take two steps forward and imagine that you are in the eye of a storm, like in the eye of a hurricane, where it is calm. And you see all of these things that are around you, and they're still there. They haven't gone away. However, in the center, you are calm and you are safe. And then you imagine that the eye of the storm, you look up and there's a blue sky and the sun shining, and you imagine that the storm is beginning to start to be, the eye is becoming larger and larger and larger, and the winds have died down until the storm completely dissipates, and you're again under blue sky and sunny sky and all this sort of stuff. And basically what you're doing is that one of the things that people don't understand that us hypnotherapists do is that the conscious mind speaks in language and words. The subconscious mind speaks in pictures and symbols. And like you were talking about your meditative practice, you use visualization techniques. That's because the subconscious mind does not know the difference between something that you are remembering or something that you're visualizing, such as thinking about a vacation that you're going to go on or a wonderful experience or something like that. It doesn't have the ability to make that discernment. So if you visualize and use as many senses as possible to think of an experience, your subconscious will operate as though this is true and move you in that dynamic. And the same thing with this particular exercise, the Eye of the Storm, even though, again, you're saying, well, wait a minute, I don't want these feelings. The thing is that you can't deny that these feelings are there. Also, that you can also control your perception and how you're going to respond. That's, you know, we were talking about words and language there, and I asked people, I said, tell me what the word responsibility means. And I get a slew of all sorts of different things. Oh, I'm obligated to do this or that, or, you know, I have to do A, B, and C and all these sorts of things. And I'll tell them, no, that's not really what responsibility means. If you look it up in the dictionary, the word responsibility simply means the ability to respond. Nothing more, nothing less. But we layer all these different things on top of it, which are not necessarily true, but the thing is that your subconscious knows what that word actually means because we learned it when we were younger.
Very interesting. Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, as you bring up what words actually are versus the way we tend to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Comes up, or the meanings that we have shifted them to be as opposed to what they actually are sometimes. And
well, haven't you learned in your journey in life, Ms. George, that really when you back up and you strip away what we have put on top of it and look at its essential nature, that it's quite simple.
It really is. I mean, we tend to make things far more complicated than they are, and I think that sometimes when we're struggling, we've gotten to a point where we're making them really, really complicated. And mm-hmm. I find myself over and over again that when we come back to the simplest of things, we get the greatest release. There's enough happening in those simple things. If we want to analyze it, if you want to take an apple, you can analyze it down and get the whole universe in there. But sometimes we just need to focus on this is an apple.
And it's a delicious fruit, absolutely. And again, you know, and there's a lot of philosophies and even religions, you know, that really, you know, strive to teach this. You know, if you go for the simplicity of things, if you bring it down to its essential nature and stop piling up the woulda, coulda, shouldas and all this sort of stuff on it and just kind of step back a little bit, you reclaim your power. We're very powerful beings in so many different ways. And if you just release the emotional baggage and stuff that's attached to it, we can perform at wonderful levels. Or learning how to let go. You know, some of the most creative geniuses, what's his name? Steve Jobs is still, you know, our current one, Edison, who created the light bulb, and all these sorts of people, even the gentleman who created, believe it or not, the sewing machine. All of these people had taken what's called power naps. What they did was they had a problem. They had a challenge, again, depending on which way you're looking at it. And so what they would do is let it go. They would lay down and take a nap. And more often than not, they came up their dreams. By letting go of an issue, they came up with the perfect solution, just like the gentleman who created the sewing machine. He could not figure out how to get the thread through the fabric and interlock with the bottom thread. He went to sleep and he had a dream. He was in a field, in a hay field, and he was holding a staff. And he turned the staff upside down, and in the staff, when he turned it upside down, was a hole in the middle of the staff, and he was jumping in and out of it, in and out of it. And he woke up and he had the solution. I need to put a hole in the needle that will then interlock with the thread beneath. And the same thing with Edison, the same thing with Steve Jobs. If you learn how to let go of an issue or a challenge or a problem that you're having in your life and step back from it and saying, you know what, the perfect solution and resolution will come to me at the appropriate time. Often it will in a shorter period of time than you if you worried over it. Worried really never gets us anywhere. It actually is inhibitive of actualizing our potential or having solutions to issues and problems that we have in life. But we're so focused, you know, on the issue or the problem that we think the harder we work on it, the more. The sooner I will come up with a solution. And sometimes, yes, definitely hard work does come into play. That's there's no doubt about that. But often if we step back just a little bit, often we already have that information in our subconscious mind to allow us to fulfill our desires, wants, and needs.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes we just, you know, we get in our way when we're in that space, we're really trying to force our will, which is why it's not happening when we're stepped out of that connection with divine spirit or God or whatever term somebody wants to use there. And we're trying so hard to force our will, and we need to get out of our own way in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
Step back, and when we let it go and we relax, again, when we're worrying, that stress and that tension just doesn't seem to allow the information to pass. And as soon as we relax and we let it go, it can just come right up for us.
Right, and there are certain levels of tension, but to put it in a context in which anybody who's listening to this wonderful program can understand is, think about a time when you forgot a name of somebody or something or a movie or whatever it is, and you trying to think of this name or this word or whatever it is, and then you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning to the call of nature, and there's the name. Oh, that's what it is. What you did was, is you let it go. You forgot about it. You suspended it for a while, and then it allowed the conscious mind to then bring this information up. Now, what's important about this particular analogy is that not only do we have certain emotional blocks, but we actually have emotional issues that are in our tissues or in our muscles. So when you relax certain key areas of the body, it relaxes or releases the information in which you're seeking. I teach people what's called the reset button technique. And this is a very natural thing that the body does in order to come back to a center of power and of balance. It's basically the sigh that we do. And basically what you do is you release any tension in the jaw, in the shoulders, and in the belly and the lower back. You inhale through the nose slowly, pause, and then you exhale twice as slowly as your inhalation. You do this about 3 to 5 times. And what this does is it allows nutrient-rich oxygen to circulate through the brain. It releases the memory held in certain muscles, such as if you're upset or tense. Once you release that tension, the body releases that particular memory and allows you to come back to your center of power, of calmness, of serenity and creativity. It's something that, again, let's go back to early childhood. All of us, at certain points, the way our parents, we had decent parents, around the age of 3-4 months, we had to learn how to calm ourselves. You know, beforehand, our parent would, usually our mom, would come, we'd start to cry, and they'd come and feed us or change us and all this sort of stuff. And then there's a point where we need to learn how to calm ourselves. And so what will happen is a parent will allow us to cry for a while. And if you've ever noticed a baby who's going through this process, they'll cry and cry and cry, and then all of a sudden they'll go, they'll sigh, and then 30 seconds later they're asleep. What has happened is that an inner mechanism, a self-calming mechanism occurs. Just like, think about a time, perhaps, you're running late for an appointment, your cell phone is dead, and you cannot get a hold of the person and say, look, I'm on my way, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. And there you are, you're running late, and you're stuck in traffic or some other situation or circumstances prohibitive of you reaching that appointment in time. And then finally you come to a point where you're like, your body will sigh and the thoughts will follow, okay, I will calm down, I will give my excuses when I'm there, and move forward with this. It's a natural process of the mind in which it's our self-calming and self-centering mechanism. It's natural. Everything that I do in my practice is natural. It's things that you already do. I call myself a glorified guide, basically, and reminding you of things you already know that you didn't necessarily realize that you know at certain levels. And it's very effective in whatever it is. Because what happens is when you do the 3 to 5 breaths, when you're doing the reset button technique, you are no longer thinking about the past, which, and I found out not too long ago, about a year or so ago, that Latsu and I have the same understanding that if you're thinking about the past, you're depressed. If you're thinking about the future, you're anxious. But if you're in the present moment, you're at peace. And so what the reset button techniques, by simply giving yourself a little bit of breathing room, you're no longer thinking about the past, and you're no longer concerned about the future, but you're in the here and now, where your power truly exists. And it gives you the opportunity to now make new choices and new decisions.
And that is the truly powerful space. I mean, and I think these cues are so important to us to realize, you know, where we're living and the space we're in, and to start to just develop that awareness. You know, if you're in this place, you're in the past, and go, oh, wait, I'm in the past. Let me get back here in the present. Let me do that reset technique and get those breathing aspects in and bring it back together. It's so important to opening these doors and doing things. And I want to remind people, Kate, that these exercises that we're talking about, they are on the articles tab of the empowerpuzzles.com. And also to remind people that they can go on there and you have some free puzzles that they can work on that side as well, that they can check out and enjoy and play
yes.
around with and check out more of your
yeah,
work
I
there.
Do. Yeah, and they're different levels of that. But I'll have to check, and you may very well be right, but I know that those articles are on thehealingquest.com. I'll have to check on Empower Puzzles, and you're probably right. They're probably on that site as well. But, yeah, I have the free, you know, the thing is sometimes you want to check something out before you buy it. Like the Empower Puzzles site, not only do I have your ability to buy the paperback, but also the ebook, but also it's a subscription website. It's under $5 a month, and, you know, and I'm one of those people, I'm really straightforward, and I hate games and gimmicks and stuff like that. So on my site, if you decide you're, say, going to purchase the website, and automatically what it will do is refresh every month. Basically, you have access to all of the books and all of the puzzles to play with. However, if you decide that you don't want that anymore, it's a very easy process. You don't have to jump through hoops in order to, you know, release your information or your credit card or stuff like that. That's one thing that drives me nuts about certain things nowadays, is that, you know, you have to go through this complicated process in order
right.
to, undo something. And I simply, that's completely against my philosophy in life. Things need to be simple.
I agree. They very much need to, and I would say just let people know where they can reach you here. You know, again, the Empower Puzzles is where I found it, but you do have the articles in both places, and you've got some great insights and some great articles on there. And again, for people that want to kind of go in and try it out and check it out, they can play around with the free puzzles that are in there as well and see what's happening with that. But, Kate, if somebody wants to reach you and they say, yeah, I really like what's happening here and I like all this information you've been sharing, and how do I get hold of you, and, you know, what is it like? Can you do a session online, or do I have to be in person with you? Or,
well, thank you for bringing that up. That's something that's really wonderful. When I lived in Chicago for a long time, and I had my clinics. I had three clinics, hypnotherapy clinics in Chicago. One was in Chicago, one was in a suburb, and one was in Madison, Wisconsin. And I worked with a gentleman named Larry Garrett. And if anybody listening is in Chicago and wants to see Larry Garrett, it's Garrett Hypnosis and Wellness Center. He is absolutely wonderful, but he developed what's called electronic hypnosis, which a lot of hypnotherapists and hypnotists use nowadays. And what electronic hypnosis is you'll do an orientation face-to-face with a hypnotherapist, And then they bring you to a small private room with a comfy chair and a blanket, a video monitor up in the corner, and headphones, and then do the session that way. I have found wonderfully, because I didn't necessarily trust Skype and Skype sessions until I had used a couple of previous clients and did different work. And I realized it's the same thing as electronic hypnosis. So not only can I see people in my private practice in Scottsdale, Arizona, face-to-face, but also I utilize Skype in order to work with people basically around the globe. I have a client that I help correct her 20-year anxiety panic disorder. And I'm just so delighted, with this, ability. So because of Skype, I can see my client. Because as a hypnotherapist, when I'm relaxing you and bringing you into the hypnotic induction, I'm able to see you, and I'm able to tell where you're at and modify things as needed to help correct at the, again, the subconscious level. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand what hypnosis or hypnotherapy is, and really it's something that you do every day. It's just different levels of mind activity. Like a light state of hypnosis would be very similar to, say, focusing in on this radio program that we're that people are listening to, and you're focused in on one particular thing. Or if, say, you're watching a TV program and you're really into it, you're focused on that one thing, you're still aware of the environment around you, but you really don't care. And many of us have had the experience of, say, getting in our car, driving from home to work or home to a familiar place, and remember getting in the car, and then all of a sudden we're pulling into a parking space, and we're like, how the heck did I get here? I don't remember the trip. That's a light state of hypnosis. A medium state of hypnosis would be akin to, say, waking up in the morning and you're still dreaming a little bit, and maybe you're aware of the environment, maybe somebody walking around in another room or the birds outside, and you're so relaxed you don't know where the bed ends and you begin. That's a medium state of hypnosis. Then there's the deep state of hypnosis called the somnambulistic state, and everybody thinks this is what hypnosis is. It's like you've fallen asleep and you don't remember a thing. There's actually what's called a hypnotic rhythm in which you go through, and it's all natural states. I cannot make anybody do anything that they don't want to do. You are always in control. I am a glorified guide. And that's really what's important for people to understand about the nature of hypnosis, is that if a hypnotherapist could make you do what you want to do, what I say to people is like, okay, so after the orientation, I'll do an induction and put you into a trance, and then during that trance, I'd suggest that you turn all of your assets over to me, and then I'd bring you up out. And then I'd call you from the island I own. It doesn't work that way. Hypnosis is not mind control. I cannot control your mind, but I can guide your mind into a place where it wants, desires, and needs to be.
Wonderful. Yeah, and I've learned that too, and it really is. And people, I'm glad you brought that up, because people do not always realize that they have total control in that situation. And Kate, I really want to thank you for being on with us tonight and being here with us. And again, I encourage people to go to both of your websites. We have one of them listed at the bottom of the show description, which is thehealingquest.com, and then the other one, which is empowerpuzzles.com. And you'll find out more information there on her work, on what she's doing and how to reach her and how to contact her, and lots of great stuff going on. So thank you so much, Kate, for being here with us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and you can just go to the contact form on either one of them and shoot me an email, and I will get it. And, I'd be happy to help you out with anything that I can. And thank you so much for the opportunity. What a wonderful show you have.
Thank you. Again, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. I really appreciate the different points you brought up.
Thank you so much, Kate. Next week here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, I have Jack Elias coming on. He's going to be doing and sharing his work in Finding Your True Magic, and that is dealing with finding your loving and successful self. Again, my books on relationships have been released, and actually I'd like to share with you some of the specials that are going on for December, because I have some really great things that are happening this month. The December special is my books Activating Compassion and the Companion Workbook. Activating Compassion, the workbook, are actually available right now for $4.99 each in paperback. They're regularly $12.99, and they're available for $1.99 each in ebook, and they're regularly $9.99 each. You can go ahead and go on to my website, just right on the main page, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge1.com, and you'll see where to click for that, and it will give you the promotional codes and to use for the different links, and you'll be able to access that as well. Now, another thing that I have going on this month is that I am working with Live and Let Live Farm Rescue, and some of you, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you will remember Teresa Paradis with that show, and Teresa did some amazing work, and you can always go back and listen to the interview that I did with her, which was, gosh, I want to say September, the very end of September last year, maybe, right in that time frame. And what I'm doing is for each of my books that sell in the newest books, You, Me, Life, Dreams, as well as You, Me, Life, Dreams, the workbook, a portion of the proceeds will be going to her. It will be anywhere from $2 to $5 per book that sells. And it will be going to the Live and Let Live Farm Rescue organization. And so I highly encourage that. If you need a great gift, that's the new books based on relationships. Makes a great gift for yourself or for somebody else. And, again, part of that is going to then go on to Live and Let Live for the amazing work that they are doing there in their organization. So I encourage you to keep that open as a possibility when you're doing your shopping this holiday season. And it's a gift that keeps on giving, as they say. It's going to help a lot of different people on these things. And, again, I've got online courses going on. You can check those out. And the Compassion Tour is in motion again. You can stay on top of different things there, both through my website and through the event site that I have, JessieAnnNicholsGeorge.eventbrite.com. If you want to check out the workshops, you can even get those as the recorded course. You can do that through learnitlive.com/invite/JessieAnnNicholsGeorge. And I want to remind you that we've got several shows here on Main Street Universe throughout the week. Sunday nights we have Darren Bouquet, who is a reader at Madame Laveau in New Orleans, doing spiritual insights. Monday nights is Kevin Baird walking on the sidewalk with his Horizon Oracle Journeys deck. That's a deck he himself created, and you can learn more about that deck at templeofgaia.com. Tuesdays, Susan Weed is sharing her work in herbs and natural plants. Wednesday nights is our flagship show, and that's with Daniel, Janice, and Brett, and that's called Main Street Universe. So you can check out all of those different shows. Of course, Friday nights right here we have Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And I want to say thank you so much for being here tonight. I really look forward to seeing you back here next week as we delve more into Activating Compassion. My name is Jessie Ann Nichols George, and don't forget, if you've enjoyed the show this evening, make sure that you share it with others. It's going to be available at the same link in our archives, and you can find those as well on my website. I'm going to leave you tonight with a song, again, by Shem Shai, titled Yearning For, also known as Over and Over. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. May you enjoy the rest of your weekend and have an amazing week.
And if I could see what makes me blind, I would soar to the edge of my mind. And to touch what seems unreal, just to show you the way that I feel. And we are in time with time, one with season of change inside. And we
are in tune with the tune, caught in a balance of sun and moon. Oh, deep inside, the light within, shining to show you it's here to begin. When all I have is all I need, I will soar to the edge of eternity.
Just